101.9 FM, Unceded Airwaves unveils the hidden pages of Indigenous history and contemporary existence. We are back and looking for passionate folks to contribute to the process of putting together our weekly radio show. Our community centers Indigenous joy, excellence, and current issues. Friends and allies are welcome. No experience is necessary. Come learn with us. Our Instagram is Unceded Airwaves, and that's the best way to keep up with us. If you're interested in getting involved or you have any questions, email me, indigenouscollective@citr.ca. Hello. Welcome. Welcome to Unceded Airwaves, hosted by the Indigenous Collective of CITR 101.9 FM. My name is Danny, I'm Métis Cree, and I'm the Indigenous Collective lead. So for today, we'll be talking about the documentary, the Oscar-nominated documentary Sugar Cane. Cooper should be joining us. Francis couldn't make it, Aditya couldn't make it, and Olivia couldn't make it, but Cooper will be here. Do not fret. I might read a little bit of news for you guys from across the Turtle Island world, but trigger warnings for today, I'm not going to get too into it because too emotionally heavy, but we'll be talking about sugar cane. I won't be going into any details, but there will be talks about themes of residential school, intergenerational trauma, abuse, infanticide, etc. So please don't listen to this episode if you don't want to listen to something that might be a little heavy. But we'll be playing the soundtrack, which is absolutely gorgeous and composed by Mallie O'Bomswin. And we've played a lot of her stuff before and her kind of compositions and things that she's worked on. And I'm really excited because I haven't heard this. And actually, maybe I might be able to layer it as I'm talking and just play a little bit for you. Or maybe not. It appears the aux cable is missing, but alas, we'll see. I'm hoping that this soundtrack, I'm expecting some kind of ambient vibes, and definitely not super poppy, super lyric-y. I'm expecting very, very ambient. So we'll see if that's where this goes. Hopefully that is where it will go. So I'm going to try and see if I can run the mission for you right now so that we can get just a taste of what we're in for today. Wow, this is exactly what I was expecting. So I'm going to start by playing the mission, the lucky ones, and then Charlene's theme. So here we go. These are all from Sugarcane original motion picture soundtrack composed by Mallie O'Bomswin. Thank you.
Hello. Take a moment to ease your mind. I'm glad you're here. Have you been to that sacred place within? That place that sound can create? Let's go there together. A place with the freshest beats. Gamelan tones of Indonesia. The many sounds of Brazil. The possibilities are infinite. All available on Mixotroph, the best in world music, every other Thursday from 6 to 7 p.m. Join me, Nolzy, for exclusive interviews with local musicians and musical explorations. Tune in!
Attention, all artists, zine makers, writers, musicians, community organizers, activists, anarchists, proles, punks, and weirdos. Are you screaming for your voice to be heard? Do you resist capitalism and colonialism? Are you angry about the current political climate and ready to act up about it? Well, we want you here. The second annual Anarchist Book Fair is now looking for creatives, creators, activists, and organizations who engage in community building, mutual aid, active resistance, skill building, and knowledge sharing to table booths and propose workshops. This is an anarchist space, which means it opposes hierarchies and seeks to amplify unheard voices and build communities of mutual aid and support. First come, first serve. 50% of tables reserved for marginalized voices. Email sponsorship@citr.ca before March 27th. sponsorship@citr.ca. sponsorship@citr.ca.
Feeling lost in. Welcome back to Unceded Airwaves on CITR 101.9 FM in so-called Vancouver. My name is Danny.
And my name is Cooper.
And today we're talking about the film Sugarcane, which was Oscar nominated for Best Documentary, but I'm not mad that it didn't win because No Other Land won, which I'm pretty happy about. I'll take that. I was hoping for either Sugarcane or No Other Land, but were you tuned in to the Oscars?
Not really. I did see afterwards the win, and it's so crazy that, like, that can win, but, like, everyone in the room can't even, like, say the word Palestine, right? Like, and, you know, I don't know. It's
really wild. Yeah. It's very dystopian. We are really, really living in this Gilded Age. People have been predicting for a while the second Gilded Age. It's real, and it's true, and it's freaky. It's a freaky time to be alive. But Sugarcane, I haven't watched it, and I have no plans to. It's not really for me. My grandfather was a residential school survivor in British Columbia, and we're not 100% certain of what school, but we believe, based on context and clues, that it was Kamloops, which is the center of this documentary. So just wait, like, I've just accepted from as soon as it came out, I'm never watching this. Maybe one day I can, but I just don't think I could, and that's okay. I don't think I need to. I think everyone else should watch it. We're going to talk a bit about the film and specifically about the soundtrack to the film. This is not an episode on the content of the film. That'd be a really heavy one. So I want to read an article for you all. I think let's do, this one is from NT Daily, North Texas Daily, and it's titled Indigenous Artist Mally Obomsawin Performs the Soundtrack from the Oscar-nominated film Sugarcane at the University. That's amazing. Like, come to the Chan Center, please, and perform this. It was silent in the syndicate. I'm just going to read this article. It's by Isabella Ferrari, March 8th, 2025, so 2 days ago. It was silent in the syndicate at the University Union until it transformed into a vibrant celebration of music and culture as Mally Obomsawin, critically acclaimed bassist, vocalist, composer, bandleader, and proud citizen of the Odinak Abenaki First Nation, graced the stage.
With her quartet, Obomsawin performed a blend of selections from her released albums alongside the hauntingly beautiful soundtrack she composed for the Oscar-nominated 2023 film Sugarcane.
Obomsawin said her love for music began back in fourth grade at her friend's house in Maine. The first time that I ever felt electrified by music was when I was having a dance party to Queen with my friend's mom, Obomsawin said. She was this amazing Iranian woman who would always play Queen and make my friend and I dance to it.
Sugarcane, directed by filmmakers and journalist Julia Brave Noisecat and Emily Casey, traces the ongoing investigation into residential schools and indigenous child graves that were left unmarked across the U.S. and Canada. Obomsawin says this is the first full-length documentary she has worked on.
Quote, the director of our film reached out to me after hearing my music. It was quite a collaborative process, Obomsawin said. I invited two of my favorite improvisers to work on it with me. Gabrielle Semin, Native American Student Association outreach officer and university student, attended Obomsawin and her band's performance last week on February 27th.
Shemin's role in the organization to help the club connect with other university organizations is to help the club connect to other university organizations to spread awareness about Indigenous culture. Quote, we are Native-identifying students who got together not only to socialize, but to present presentations, to talk about our own experiences, end quote. For example, we show up with our table like I'm currently doing here and spread awareness about our Indigenous people, the pride, and some of the issues we face both historically and currently.
Several students attended to experience Obomsawin's composition spanning her genres from jazz to roots music. Lee Bacon, or Bacon, a university graduate student and president of the Native American Student Organization, mentioned how important it is for Obomsawin to be part of an Oscar-nominated film. Quote, this nomination is saying, we are still here and we are always going to be here, Bacon said.
Before Obomsawin and her band came on stage, Bacon or Bacon told the audience the story of how Native students saved the university from closing back in 1890. Formerly known as the Texas Normal College and Teachers Training Institute, the university struggled to meet enrollment requirements. In response, they enrolled 28 members of Muskogee Creek Nation from Indian Territory, now known as Oklahoma.
These students made up more than 20% of the student body and played a significant role in helping the university stay open during a financial crisis, ensuring its survival during that period. If it weren't for these students, UNT would not be here today, Bacon said. The university has Native students to thank for their success as one of the largest universities in Texas.
Well, she also said she's a big fan of Obomsawin and finds connection through her music. Quote, Mally writes music for grounding contemporary Indigenous life, colonization, tradition, love, and rage, Bacon said. Her debut album, Sweet Tooth, challenges narratives attempting to homogenize indigeneity, and I just love it.
Semin and Bacon both said it means so much to their organization and their community that she's getting the chance to reach such a wide audience. A favorite composition of Semin's is a television show that Obomsawin worked on called Reservation Dogs. The series is set in rural Oklahoma and follows the lives of Indigenous teenagers and blends humor with deeper cultural themes.
Quote, this show is beloved among many Native American communities, Shaman said. It means the world that Mally is here because of what she has been able to achieve throughout her career.
After Obomsawin's performance, she went straight to Los Angeles, where she attended the Oscars with her cast and crew. That's amazing. The support from everyone has been a lot, Obomsawin said. It means so much for me to be a part of a nominated film that has an incredible message.
Shaman said the significance of Obomsawin's work extends beyond just the music. Quote, if seeing her bringing in indigenous music to a greater... If people see her bringing indigenous music into greater audiences, then she can have... Then she can have and make an impact on popular culture.
And thank you to Isabel Ferrari for that article from the North Texas Daily. Next, I just want to read, before I play some more songs, just a little bit from Wikipedia about Sugarcane, to just give you a bit of a briefing on what the film is. So it's a 2024 documentary directed by Julian Brave Noisecat and Emily Cassie, produced by Emily Cassie and Kellen Quinn. It follows an investigation into the Canadian Indian residential school system, igniting a reckoning in the lives of survivors and descendants. It had its world premiere at the Sundance Film Festival on January 20th, 2024, where it won the Grand Jury Award for Directing. It was theatrically released in limited engagements in the United States and Canada on August 9th, 2024, before gradually expanding to other cities starting August 16th. So the premise is that it follows investigation into the residential school system, and its release, its world premiere was at Sundance, January 20th, 2024. I remember hearing about that. On the review aggregator website, Rotten Tomatoes, 100% of 65 critics' reviews are positive, with an average rating of 8.9 out of 10. The website's consensus reads, accumulating immense emotional power as it methodically uncovers a grave injustice, Sugarcane is one of the most compelling and important documentaries of the year. So that's a little bit about Sugarcane. I really wish I had the capacity to watch this, because I wonder what your thoughts on this are, Cooper, but it, like, especially being the granddaughter of someone who survived the residential school system in British Columbia, which is what this, like, focuses on, it's just, like, too close to home, and seeing the, like, 2021 madness and then seeing, like, this coming as a result of that is so fascinating to me. Because what I mean by the 2021 madness is, like, for me, I hold a lot of frustration towards it. A lot of appreciation, because that's, like, why we've seen so much progress, and now we're in 2025, and there's Native people in media everywhere, and Lily Gladstone, and all these things, but I will always feel a lot of rage at the fact that people only started caring when a number came out, because, like, with these schools specifically, and in my own experiences, we've always known, like, as descendants of survivors, and as survivors, people have always known, and they're... It's just always going to be that bit of anger that I feel that all of this wave and renaissance of Indigenous media comes because there was finally a number given for unmarked graves.
And a number that wasn't even close.
Yeah,
like,
not even close.
The number that everyone, like, and for months after the first, like, uncovering, and, like, the first, I can't even remember now what the specific first number was.
215.
Yes, thank you. People were, like, still repeating that number over and over again.
Yeah.
And putting it everywhere and, like, on t-shirts, and it was like...
You were at, like, 7,000?
Yeah. And nobody ever was like, and that's all of them.
Yeah.
People just, like, were listening to half the story whole time, yeah.
People just so fixated so much on 215, 215, 215, 215. And for me and my family, like, being, like, 95% certain that that's the school, like, that this documentary is focused on that my own grandpa went to and survived, barely. It's so frustrating to know that I was raised, and my siblings, we were all raised knowing that these kids were buried there. But it only took some white people coming up with the number that the world was like, oh, wow. Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
And it's like, we had been saying this for so long. And then as soon as some white people with some tools come in and they have a definitive number from the outside. So, and then that's when I started seeing, like, my non-native friends wear orange shirts on Orange Shirt Day.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, all of that, it's like all the things that only other native people cared about before, because we believe each other, and the outside world would not believe us. And then seeing once some white people finally had a number to give, the whole world like clutches their pearls and gasps like, how could this have happened? And yeah, I just need to get that out. I feel a lot of frustration that, and ultimately sugarcane is kind of the like epitome of this, because it's literally about the 215. It's about Kamloops. Mm. It's like about, even though there's been schools that have had thousands of unmarked graves found, there's it, not that there needs to be a ranking, but it's just very fascinating, this obsession with Kamloops because it was the first. And same with like residential school denialists. They have an obsession with Kamloops because of this whole phenomenon of the 215 and it being the first to come out.
God, and you could see it that orange shirt day too. Like it was so clear. Like I remember like whatever the orange shirt day event that I went to that year, I was blown away and I was thinking like, how did so many people come out? Like,
yeah, where like, was all this before?
Yeah, and then I was like kind of expecting that the next time and it was like not even...
Yeah, nothing.
Yeah, not even half the amount of people. And actually, that might not be true, but it's...
No, I definitely saw that. Felt like there was a fall off in 2021. Like people didn't... Yeah, after 2021.
Even just like when I went to high school, it was like the amount of white teachers that were like, I'm going to do my... Like, you know, I'm going to wear my T-shirt and I'm going to buy it from the student club and I'm going to like give them a pat on the back when I do it. And then the next year it was like way less. Yeah. Yeah.
I remember the day after the number came out, I was at school and everyone was wearing orange shirts and I had to leave. Like, I just couldn't stop crying because of what I'm talking about right now. And I'm able to articulate it a lot better because I've had a lot of time to process this frustration, but... No, I felt this literally the day after the numbers came out at school. I was so mad. I was just so angry because everybody who I had never seen care before, like Orange Shirt Day, I had probably worn an orange shirt to school since like 2018 Orange Shirt Day. I had never seen any of these people wear orange because they thought they were too cool for that. And then the next day after, it was in like May or something, but everyone came to school wearing orange shirts like in May, the day after the number came out. And I was just seething walking through the hallway. I was like, what? Like, why do you only care when there's an official number? Why did literally nobody care until there was a number given? And that's my biggest gripe with all of this stuff is just... this obsession with it, and it's like a slap in the face. It's like you wouldn't believe us for so long until there's a number, and then now, even then, people still don't believe always. But sugarcane, so yes. That's my reasoning for why I haven't watched it and why I probably won't, and my thoughts on the 2021 renaissance of people caring. But yeah, watching all of this play out, it's really fascinating seeing all of this culminate in an Oscar-nominated documentary when literally, like, because I'm from the community where most of the people in my hometown who were sent to residential school were sent to Kamloops, pretty much everybody. So a lot of my friends, grandparents were sent there, some parents even, great-grandparents. So there was, like, so the community that I was in all over BC, Soyuz Indian Band is the First Nation there, are the people who were most affected by Kamloops Indian Residential School. So there was like a fleet of cars and trucks of people who went from my hometown Oliver all the way up to Kamloops to all go and mourn together and grieve together. And there was a lot of ceremonies and things happening in my hometown, monuments being unveiled to honor the survivors. So I guess that's kind of I say that just to voice kind of my different perspective on this of being literally, like, from, like, my hometown, most of the people who were sent to residential school there were sent there. So I really have seen the impacts of all of this media, like, clown show on the people who were actually affected by Kamloops Indian Residential School. And, yeah, I'm glad I have a platform here in Vancouver to voice that frustration because I know a lot of people at home feel it and have no outlet to share that with the world. But... there's many great things about this film. I love to see Indigenous writers, Indigenous people behind the camera and in front of the camera, and this is definitely one of those films. I'm looking at editors. It says Maya Daisy Hawk. Is it? one second. Okay, no, that is a different
Maya. Different Maya Hawk.
Different Maya Hawk. I was like, what the cheese?
What the
Maya Hawk just edited this. That'd be wild, but
I could see it happening.
It's possible. So I think I'll play a few more songs from the Sugarcane soundtrack. And then when we come back, I wanted to read this article I found where they talked to one of the directors, or the director. What is his name? Where'd it go? No, I lost everything. I believe it was something Cat.
The director's name? Julian Brave Noise Cat.
Yeah, Julian Brave Noise Cat. So when we come back after playing these tracks, hopefully we will read that out for you and talk a little bit more about the director and the behind the scenes of this film. Here's Do You Want to Know, Discovery, and First Week of September.
Thank you.
No worries. Ride On Bike Shop has got you covered. Ride On has the best deals in town for new and used bikes, top-notch servicing, and all the parts or accessories you've been dreaming about. Whether you've got a little one who needs to learn how to ride, or if you're about to go on the Tour de France, Ride On is the place for you. We'll also happily pick up your old bikes and recycle them back into the community. Located on 2255 West Broadway, we are open from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. from Tuesday to Saturday. That's RIDEON Bike Shop. See you there!
Hello! Bonjour! Hello! Tawao, everybody. I love that word. Is it a midshift too, or is it just Cree?
I don't know.
Tawao. Let's see if it's a midshift and Cree. I think it's just Cree. But Tawao means there is space for you here. But it's generally seen as just the translation for welcome. But it directly means there is space for you here. And I love that. So, Tawao, everybody.
Do you want to search it up on Métis to go? Or midshift to go?
Midshift to go. It's T-A-W. It's just T-A-Wow.
Oh, okay.
There's some accents in there. We got midshift to go
pulled
on
up.
Deck always.
There's not.
Maybe if you look up welcome in English, maybe it will tell you. But we're going to read an article by Veronica Esposito. August 9th, 2024, by The Guardian, on The Guardian, and it is titled, and warning, we will be talking a bit about residential schools and some hardships there, but not going too in-depth about details, but just know it, like, might not be suitable for everyone. it is titled, Designed to Tear Families Apart, a Shocking Film Exposes Abuse and Infanticide. And I want to read this because I'm really fascinated by the lens of people who have no idea what the system is. And, like, are hearing about this for the first time. Because it's really fascinating. Like, I grew up, I can't think of a time where I ever learned about residential schools. I always knew because my grandpa was sent to one. So it's really fascinating to me to see this other, complete other lens of, like, people completely removed from this context learning about it and writing about it. That's kind of what this article is. But I chose this one because there's a lot of talk about Noise Cat, the director. And I wanted to give a bit more of insight into that. So, just know in reading this article, we're not trying to give you a briefing on the history of residential schools. I'm kind of just reading this so we can take a look at the, like, deep outsider lens of, like, talking about residential schools on a more surface level. So, nothing groundbreaking here. Residential schools for Indigenous children have a stain on the histories of both the United States and Canada, and although steps have been taken in making amends with the past, the new documentary Sugarcane reveals just how much of the process still remains incomplete.
These schools operated throughout the 19th and 20th centuries, with Canada's last residential school closing in only 1997, and they have been referred to as sites of attempted cultural genocide against Indigenous people. For many children, attendance at these schools was compulsory, forcing them to travel far away from their homes, where they were systematically separated from their language and culture, and suffered various forms of abuse. Attendance at these schools has been linked to serious mental health consequences, including elevated rates of depression, substance abuse, and suicide.
That's a pretty mild way to put it.
Yeah.
New light was recently shed on the level of atrocities that occurred at... Not really new light. Maybe you guys turn the light on, but... New light was recently shed on the level of atrocities that occurred in residential schools when in 2021 it was revealed that potential unmarked graves had been discovered on the site where the former Kamloops Indian Residential School once stood. It was this news that spearheaded the creation of the documentary Sugarcane, which investigates the residential school St. Joseph's Mission.
So hopefully the rest of this won't be just like the one brief paragraph in a textbook. The revelations of Sugarcane are many, but perhaps the most shocking one is evidence that the filmmakers bring forth that infanticide was practiced at this school, where the bodies of children of women abused by Catholic priests were incinerated on school grounds. As it turns out, this horrific discovery has serious implications for co-director Julian Brave Noisecat, whose father, Archie, may have been the only survivor of these events. Julian makes the courageous decision to place himself into the movie, and we see father and son slowly working through years of estrangement and decades of history to learn the facts about how Archie came into the world.
You might add that, again, that absolutely horrifying detail is something I knew growing up. Like, this isn't a surprise.
Yeah, I don't know if it was the filmmakers that discovered this.
No, yeah. Definitely not. Like, the incineration thing about Kamloops and St. Joseph's Mission was known, definitely within the community of survivors and their descendants, and publicly known as well. But yeah, that's like a detail I just like to add to that. Like, I definitely remember hearing that. Like, after Stephen Harper's apology in 2008, that's when my grandpa opened up, and then he died in October of that year. So it was a few months where he had to open up, and that was one of the things. So yeah, absolutely horrifying, but I'm glad it's being covered, and people are finally listening. But here's some more from the article. Noisecats is possibly the most compelling of the four entwined narratives that the movie follows, which includes Chief Rick Gilbert, who travels to the Vatican seeking redress for the church's actions, investigator Charlene Bellow, who painstakingly pieces together exactly what happened at the school, and Chief Willie Sellers, who has organized and led the inquiry into the school's history.
Although the residential schools have had an immense impact on Noisecat's family, he shared with me in a video interview that for much of his life, he knew virtually nothing about his grandmother's experiences as a young girl. During summers visiting her, she would offer the strange story of how she and her fellow female students would say to one another, quote, "the black bear's coming," whenever they saw one of the school's priests or nuns. Quote, "All I got from my grandmother was this very cryptic accounting of her experience at residential school." Noisecat told me, quote, she said that the people who were supposed to be looking out for us were predators.
Very common narrative, definitely. My family's experience as well. Like, very cryptic and not much information. Noisecat's story about his grandmother indicates the larger silence surrounding these schools, even within the indigenous community, and this is one of the reasons why this documentary is so important. According to Noisecat, sugarcane contradicts the popular view among many in the media that residential schools are well known and thoroughly discussed within indigenous communities. Every time I heard this, he told me, I thought, this doesn't ring true to my experience. Exactly.
Indeed. When Noisecat and his co-director, Emily Casey, attempt to discuss the schools within the community, they are largely met with silence. As the film explores, part of the trauma faced by Indigenous people is that of things they suffered, is that the things they suffered at the school left them speechless, without a language to discuss the events or people with whom they could share their experiences. One of the keys to processing and overcoming this past is to learn to talk about it, and for those who suffered to tell the story in their own, and for those who suffered to tell the story in their own terms, both in terms of constructing this narrative and in encouraging others to do so, sugarcane is a powerful intervention for the health of the community.
One of the strengths of sugarcane is how Noisecat and Cassie let this reality make its presence felt throughout their documentary. The movie plunges viewers right into the heart of the story, preferring the texture of the lived experience of the Indigenous people over a more straightforward accounting of exactly what happened. Jules and I talked a lot about what the silences meant, and also reflecting the pacing of this world, Cassie told me. This is really what the world feels like, and it was very important to us that it felt representative of what we were seeing and feeling.
Because of these choices, Sugarcane is a movie that moves at a very deliberate pace. This may challenge some viewers accustomed to punchier rhythms, although this choice gives space to the silences that continue to permeate the community, and it makes the few words that do eventually escape feel hard-earned and substantial. Quote, we didn't want to tell a story from 10 feet away, Cassie said, quote, we wanted to tell it from people living it, quote. This makes sugarcane extremely effective in reflecting the larger challenges still faced by the indigenous community as it begins the long, difficult work of confronting its trauma by piecing together this story and speaking about what happened at residential schools.
That's part of why I'm on this mic talking about it right now, is like, that's all very intentional on my part, and like in my own family's journey, is to be public about it because my grandpa had to live so many years in silence. So it's very significant to me that I'm able to speak on the radio about this and about this like, it feels so crazy to me. Like, I can't even imagine telling Danny like 6 years ago that there's like a whole documentary about this specifically. It's Oscar nominated. It's huge. Like American, the average like American might watch it. Like, that is so insane to me. And that we can go on radio on like an indigenous talk show and talk about our experiences and connecting those dots. And people, I don't have to explain everything. Like, I can talk about this and talk about our experiences without having to give a whole preface of what this is and have to deal with the what that happened first before even getting into it. So that just, I'm just so grateful to be in this context where people know what's going on. And I'm reading an article from The Guardian that's like meant for non-Indigenous audiences talking about this. And then where did you end up?
I ended piecing together the story and speaking about what happened at residential schools.
As the film also makes clear, this is very much an ongoing story. When Gilbert heads to the Vatican to have an audience with a bishop, he does receive an apology, but he responds that this is not enough, noting that the Bible says apologies are only the first step in righting a wrong. He tells the bishop, "There have been apologies, but nothing has happened." This nothing is a significant part of the systematic failure that traumatized the attendees of the residential schools. Sugarcane notes how attempts were made at the time to report that children were being abused at the school, but these reports fell on deaf ears. The attempted infanticide of Noise Cat's father was reported to the police, along with records of other victims, Cassie said. Like, I'm not going to read that, because I don't want to give you guys very direct and horrible examples, but I'll just put a dot, 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 and then nothing was done to follow up on these crimes. In fact, as Sugarcane reports, the only person to face any criminal liability was the mother of these babies who suffered infanticide, who was sentenced to a year in jail for neglect of her child.
It is too late for many of the Catholic priests who abused children in the residential school system to be held accountable, but simply sharing the truth of what happened can be a powerful healing effect. Noise Cat has discussed how screenings of the film have often led, often end with audience members experiencing catharsis, and the film documents how the process of being involved with this project has helped many process and overcome their trauma. Quote, "This film is also about the resilience and the love of the community and the families you see here," said Noise Cat. Quote, they have endured in spite of how these schools were designed to tear families apart.
Yeah. I mean, all of that, like, I really want to be able to watch this film. I really want to be able to watch it. And I really hope one day I will be able to. Because I want to see that part. Like, I was a part of that, of the community healing in the southern interior after the number was announced. And I'm really curious about these depictions and how they covered that. Because that was, like, for my family, very significant in our healing journeys, was going and attending all of these events. And I really want to be able to watch this film because I feel like I would feel pretty represented by that. There was just so many healing things that happened, and it definitely was a community effort. Like, my siblings and I all went to this one event, and it was just to hold space for grief, and that was, like, so significant. And it was actually our mom who suggested that we go, and my dad's a Native one, my mom is white, but she, like, wanted all of us to go together to really work through it and process it. So watch Sugarcane if you're able to. Seems to be a really, really great film. The soundtrack is so totally amazing. Malio Bomswin is great. Just from those bits that we played for you, it sounds like heartbreakingly beautiful. Like, her compositions are just absolutely amazing. I'm not sure where you can watch Sugarcane. Let me check. I think it's on Netflix, actually.
Oh, wow. That's wild.
I'm pretty sure. I think that was one of the big things. Or is it... Okay, it was acquired by National Geographic Documentary Films. It's on Disney Plus and Hulu. So if you've got Disney Plus or you've got Hulu, go watch Sugarcane. Probably won't be a fun watch, but definitely an important one and definitely a beautiful one. I'm really curious about the pacing of the film because that's something really significant. That stood out to me a lot. I don't know if that stood out to you, but the mm-hmm. intentional choice to pace out the movie to reflect the silence and not just lay out the experience of survivors, but lay it out in the way that they tell their own experiences and stories. I'm really curious about that. And it sounds like an absolutely beautiful film. So I think I will close out with a few tracks. I think I'll close out with Remembrance, What Do We Do, and Father from the Sugarcane soundtrack. And that's all. So thank you for listening. Thank you. See you later.
Thank you.
This is Jiffy Marks from Autogram, and you are listening to UBC Radio CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver.
Hanging on your every word, and any time you talk, the rope is burning. And maybe I'm just brave when I'm asleep. I tell you how you kill me in my dreams. I wouldn't like to hold my breath to be pushed.